This is the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast, helping you to understand and know how to embody your true magic, your true power, because you have the freedom and ability to dream into being a life of beauty. I'm your hostess and head witch over at Dream Freedom Beauty, Natalie Ross. Today's episode features a really magic woman, Liz Miliarelli of Sister Spinster, and we talk about so much amazing stuff. We talk about everything from reclaiming and revitalizing your ancestral traditions, to partnering with plants as allies, to reconnect with your ancestors. We talk about exploring working with holy waters. She also guides us through some concepts around sex magic. And we talk about flower essences and working with willow as a support for going through the grief process. Join us today on our show. And if you enjoyed this show, we have a secret episode too, where Liz shares some of her story around transitioning from living a life focused on making the money and having the things and getting the stuff into a life that is centered on being in right relationship with her purpose and with spirit and with the earth. And we get really into some ideas around money and ideas around how to make that transition and just own it. So if you are interested in that secret episode, you can go to dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret and get that information there. And I'll be back at the end of the episode to give you that link again. I hope you enjoy the show. And I really, really, really love hearing from y'all. If you enjoyed this show, please leave us a review on iTunes and share it with a friend. Welcome to the show, Liz Miliarelli. We are so excited to have you here to talk about all things ancestral and flower magic and all kinds of amazing witchy ways.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a true pleasure. And we're wondering, would you like to lead us and our listeners on an invocation to create the space for this conversation?
Absolutely. Yes. I would love to invite you to take a few breaths deeply and close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you. And just allow yourself to create a conscious connection between you and the earth, connecting to the earth, our only home. With each breath, let's just invite ourselves into being present in conversation, grounding into a space as we externalize a kind of cauldron so that we can simmer this juicy information together. And then I'd also like to just call in our ancestors, since we'll probably be mentioning them today. And since it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I'd also like to call in our ancestors of resistance, those ancestors who have struggled against oppression and striving for justice and freedom. So we invite all of those ancestors of resistance in to the conversation today. And we thank them for being with us each and every day. Blessed be.
Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, hello. Welcome, ancestors. Woo! Always a pleasure to invite them in. And so yeah, there's so much interesting stuff to talk with you about. And I think the thing that I contacted you about was I saw on your Instagram, which for anyone listening who might be on Instagram, Liz is Sister Spinster. So you can go check out her pictures while you're listening and follow along. But you were talking about a class you do about folk medicine and magic of old Europe. And you're talking about decolonizing our roots and remembering, reclaiming, and revitalizing our traditions. And
yes,
can you just tell us, first of all, what inspired you to do this? Like, why did you even get into this topic in the first place in your life? And And then we'll move into talking more about that class specifically and those teachings.
Yeah. I think I've always had a pretty strong connection with my ancestors, and that work, I think, has just always, or that connection has always informed the way in which I think about the world and move around in the world, and just knowing that I have this connection to people who came before me. And I think within Western culture, I don't know how present that is. And so when I started studying herbalism, I also was in the Bay Area, at herb school, and I realized that there were a lot of folks who were white people who were going to frequent ayahuasca ceremonies, who were going to different sweat lodges and kind of taking those ceremonies out of context. And I guess for me, it just really spurred the thinking about, like, wow, what are my ancestral ceremonies and traditions? And I know that a lot of the plant work has been saved and recovered and remembered, but there was also just a feeling of lack within, like, a spiritual community in the Bay Area of, oh, why aren't we honoring our own ancestors and kind of figuring out what they did before we start going into other cultures, not out of a lack of curiosity, but just from, I feel like a lot of it was coming from, how do I put it? I guess just a lack of context or a lack of connection to one's own root. And I felt that that was really appropriate within the herbalism world to talk about, just because there's a lot of cultural appropriation that happens in the herb world. And so I just felt called to start talking with folks about what does it look like to be a white person of European descent as a settler on stolen land, and talk about herbs and healing practices that might not be of our own culture. What does that look like? And so this class has been birthed out of many, many conversations with teachers of mine and friends and students, and also with my own ancestors, asking them for guidance around it. And yeah, I guess, I mean, that's kind of where it started. And it's really evolved since the first round of the class that happened maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It's been evolving every year to feel much deeper, which is exciting.
I think a lot of people are waking up to the idea that, oh, they have ancestors. Oh, they have cultural traditions from their homelands, you know, especially people of European descent. Like, they never thought about it, never even considered it, because they're so far removed from that history and from that ancestry. So that all that appropriation that's happening is, like, that, you know, signifies that desire and that craving for that connection. But then I love how you're stepping up and bringing to it this idea of, like, hey, y'all have your own ancestors, like, check it out. what would you
say? And those ancestors were, like, really magical too. And just because there's not maybe a living connection to them, but it's still really possible, I think, to do the groundwork and learn about it. And then also just use plants in that, because our ancestors have been in relationship with plants for so long and forever, basically. And I think that working with the plants can really help us connect to our ancestors. So pairing them together felt really right to me.
It feels right also, because plants literally are our ancestors. They're some of our, you know, after microbes, there's some, and fungi, they're some of our most ancient ancestors. So it's, you know, this whole family going on. Like, they know how to take us back.
Yeah, I absolutely. I have a friend in LA, we used to teach in Oakland together, and she does a lot of the same work that I do, but within a Middle Eastern ancestry background. And she's doing a lot of work on reclaiming Middle Eastern traditions, medicine traditions. And she, her name is River Rose Apothecary, and her name is Layla. And she kind of coined this term that I love so much, which is plantcestors. Oh. And she talks about the plants as our ancestors in that way. And she's, yeah, an incredible, it's an amazing term.
Yeah, I love that, plantcestors. So this idea of plantcestors, oh, that's like, that's just such a good term. That's such a good term. Thank you for coining that, Layla, if you're listening. So something that's really interesting that I hear you say and that I've seen you write is about reclaiming and revitalizing our traditions and decolonizing our roots. I'd love to introduce to our listeners what that means and dig deeper into that. Like, what, how do you decolonize your roots and how do you reclaim your traditions?
Yeah, that is a huge question that I'm still navigating and trying to uncover every day. I think, let's see, how do you do it? Well, you start by doing the groundwork of really trying to find a family tree and a direct lineage. And I think that that's really important to do, just to really do the nitty-gritty work of research. And it can take hours and hours and hours, especially if you aren't sure of where your family's from, or maybe you were adopted. I know that that is a thing that comes up for people. But I really recommend that people try to do as much of that work as they can, do genetic testing, if you have the privilege of doing that. And also, if you kind of have like general ideas, to maybe just start researching like cultural folk traditions of the groups of people that you think you might be descended from. And yeah, ask questions to elders who are maybe of that lineage of, and really ask them for advice on how to like remain connected to either that culture or that tradition. And I think that that can be really problematic in many ways, because there's a lot of really dark shadow within all ancestry, it seems like. I haven't met one person who like hasn't struggled with their ancestors in some way, just because I think we all contain like colonizer and colonized in different ways. And I think that that's been just a really important coming to terms with for me and my students, of just looking at the history of, okay, you know, our ancestors most recently were colonizers, and before that, we were also colonized in different ways. And so just really looking at that lineage and coming to terms with it in the best way that we can, holding grief that might have been unmourned from like 500 years ago or 300 years ago or even 50 years ago of being displaced. And then to bring that into our awareness of how are we maybe actually perpetuating those colonizer or colonized actions or mentality. So it's complex and it's painful, and it's also, I think for me it's just really grounding in terms of what it means for me to be a human and have compassion for others and see, oh, my ancestors actually experienced similar struggle to what's happening today. And it kind of motivates me to organize and activate and yeah, get my stuff together around it.
Clean up your ancestral shit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. God, and there's a ton of it, especially as like white people on stolen land. And I think that that's a really,
I mean, it's just something that we really need to look at and talk about, but, and not just talk about it, but then also do something about it. Like, what are ways in which we can continue to decolonize, whether that be like donating money or actually working on decolonizing land, like giving money back to indigenous tribes. I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like, but I'm committed to trying to figure out what I can do about it.
And it seems like there's a lot of options for what you could do. I mean, probably for every single person listening, if they really sat and thought about it, they could come up with a creative way to do this. Like, listening to you, I'm thinking, oh, even the act of acknowledging where you have appropriated someone else's, some of their culture's spiritual practices, and then looking into your own and reclaiming those can be an act of decolonizing and you know, giving back the spiritual traditions to the culture they belong to. And but then
and not be taking up space in circles. Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, there's a kind of a delay.
Just to not. Yeah, I was just saying that, like, and to not be taking up space in those circles where, you know, maybe those spaces should be reserved for other folks and not like more white people. Like, not that there shouldn't be like a cross-cultural meeting happening, but just that I think it's really, for me, I feel like it really deepens the work of when I learn about other people's traditions and cultures, that I'm able to really ground that into my own knowing of my own ancestral cultures. It makes it real and embodied for me, rather than just thinking like, oh, that's really cool, I'm going to like latch on to that and make that mine now. Whereas I'm like, actually, I know what my ancestors have done. And I think it's really cool that this culture does this differently. And I really respect that. It gives me a real grounded viewpoint in seeing how traditions and medicine ways have survived and how they work.
And maybe similar things that evolved in different parts of the world. It's, you know, but then that you see the same thing coming up across different traditions and noticing how that's translated just like without even them ever having contact, but how it's just popped up like, oh wow, that must be a universal thing that just happens with people and plants and earth and spirit. And like,
oh, absolutely, there's so many similarities when you get down to it. It really feels the same in a lot of ways, but it's just, yeah, I think just just putting it into a different context for me has just been really important in making it feel real to me and embodied.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of that in your life? Like, what is your, I believe you're Italian just from reading about you and looking at your name, but what is your ancestry? And then how did you, is there an example or a story of how you were able to put that in context from maybe a way you used to practice or a belief you used to have to how it transformed once you decolonized your roots and reclaimed your ancestral traditions?
Yeah, that's a great point. My people come from Naples, Italy, and from a town in Italy called San Giorgio Alieri. My people also come from the land that is now called Poland. And I also have ancestry that are Anglo-Saxon. I don't know about a quarter of my ancestry. My grandfather was adopted, so I'm still, it's in the unknown there.
Have you had a genetic test done?
I actually just like spit into the tube last night. And so I'm going to be sending that in tomorrow and yeah, getting that information soon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. but so one thing for me that I've been thinking a lot about is drumming, for example. Drumming being a really, really powerful instrument and magical tool, and yeah, it's just the best. And I guess I had just, well, I started wondering about my own ancestral drumming traditions, because a drum is pretty universal. And I was really interested in getting a drum to like lead workshops with, or to just have as a tool of my own. But I felt uncomfortable getting a drum that I didn't know a lot about, because I know that there's just so much power in the lineage of a drum, and what a drum means to different cultures. And usually it's all like pretty reverent, but I just started thinking about, okay, what is my own ancestral drumming tradition? And so I started doing research, and I found a woman named Alessandra Belloni, who lives in New York, and she's from Italy, and she carries the tradition of the Italian tamburiata, which is a larger kind of tambourine drum. And I went on a trip with her this summer to Italy and learned about the drumming traditions of Italy, and learned about their lineages of drumming for the ancient goddess Cybele, and what the drum meant in different times during the Middle Ages as a form of resistance, as a form of medicine. And then I actually bought a drum from a drum maker who lives only 20 minutes away from the village where my family is from. Wow. And so I was kind of just put into that lineage, and I'm terrible at the drum. I'm still trying to figure that out. I need to take lessons. But it's something that I'm really committed to learning and holding in a new way, in terms of, wow, when I play this, I'm really connected back to this lineage of resistance that I know about in my own ancestry, and this lineage of prayer, and song and medicine. So yeah, for me, that's been a really, really huge healing. And I feel like it's also, I've just been given an amazing tool. It makes me feel a lot stronger, that's for sure.
Stronger in what way?
Just because when you play the drum, it makes you feel like a total badass, even if you kind of suck at it.
I can totally.
It's like, yeah, such an amazing way to take out energy and use your energy and in a really embodied way. So, yeah, that's how it makes me feel strong.
I totally get it. I love playing drums. I haven't played them in a long time, but I've worked with in circles, in healing circles, where we do drumming, and I love that. And interesting, I'm of Scandinavian and Scottish descent, so like Danish and Scottish, and I was looking into Danish shamanism. What are the ancient Danish traditions? Can I find any like Nordic and Viking traditions? And it did go back. I finally found someone who wasn't the, what do they call it, like trained via the plastic shaman. I can't remember his name, but not to like diss anyone, but it's a term that they use, because this lineage of modern shamans mostly stems from this one guy's teachings, he's been dubbed the plastic shaman. So like, in an effort to bypass that and go to my traditions, I found like, oh, they did have drumming, and I would love to go learn about it, but then it was all in Danish. I was like, crap, I gotta learn a whole language first. But you know, it was cool to find that same, you know, that drum source that's just so similar across cultures, kind of like we mentioned earlier, with those things popping up in different cultures. So
absolutely.
And so I want to talk more about decolonizing, because this is such a big question, and especially with like Standing Rock going on and bringing a lot of attention to the national media and to people who have maybe never even really considered like indigenous rights or anything. It's, you know, they're being shown like, okay, here's a way in. Here's a way to start thinking about these things. What are some like central ideas about decolonization?
Well, there's a few here. I think, you know, for me, one of the central themes or things I work towards within decolonization is that, wow, hang on, I'm having a hard time like putting all of this together.
I believe it, because it's such a big idea, and I kind of, it's like a pop quiz for you.
Well, it's interesting too to just be talking about decolonization in this way because of like everything that's happening with the alt-right, which I can like totally get into. But I'm just trying to be really careful around my wording of it. So for me, decolonization, one of the main themes would be just really getting back to the roots. And I think that that's a really good way to look at it as plant people or just as folks who care about the earth. Just thinking about the ways in which a settler mind has influenced so many different things. And this is a European settler mind that I'm like working within this framework because that's my ancestry. And so colonization of food systems, you know, having there be certain foods that are pushed upon many, many different peoples while simultaneously traditional food ways being erased or just totally disappearing, basically, because of like huge farming practices or, you know, GMO crops or something like that. That's kind of one example of like a way in which we can focus that word decolonizing. We could also talk about like beauty standards, even of just how in mass media there's an idea of like a skinny white woman who's blonde and, you know, looks a certain way, that's kind of the norm, right? And that there's not a lot of space within the media for people who look different from that. And I guess that for me, what I'm thinking about doing is just looking at healing traditions. And so looking at ways in which, or trying to recover ways in which my indigenous ancestors to like Poland, who are indigenous to Poland or indigenous to Italy, what their healing practices were and why were they forgotten? Why were they burned? Why were they taken away? And how can we re-remember those? I guess I want to say that this is really different, even though it kind of uses a lot of the same language, or the alt-right uses a lot of that language as well, about like building a state that is like a Euro-centered state of some kind. And that's not what I'm talking about at all. I am completely against that, but it's a really scary line there, because I think like if you would ask Richard Spencer what he meant about decolonizing, he would probably think that it means to like erase. He talks about erasing other cultures, basically, whereas this is about figuring out your own culture and understanding that, and then also then having that perspective in terms of how to relate as humans to other people. So that feels like an important thing to mention, because he speaks in a lot of the same ways in terms of like, I'm really connected to my ancestors. I want to honor what my ancestors have done. And while a lot of decolonizing work has, you know, you are talking about colonization, we're not celebrating that here per se. We're looking at it and holding space for it, but then looking to transform that work into, okay, and how do we look at our lives in a way where we're able to identify ways in which we are still continuing this European colonial mindset? And because it's really deep, it's really, really deep. And it's hard to unlearn.
Right. You have to almost have a guide, someone to show you like, oh, this assumption that you have, or this way you're speaking, or this way you're interacting is perpetuating these blind, colonized ideas, and not to be guilty about it, but to like recognize it and wake up and see, oh, this action I've been doing is not really supportive of other cultures, or, you know, it's like, it's I'm trying to think of like one specific example of that, but honestly, I can't think of any right now.
Well, I think for me, like, I mean, even in just of like the way in which we judge people maybe unconsciously about like the way that they look, or mm-hmm. Or just how someone might wear traditional dress of their own culture today. And I feel like when even like I grew up in New York, and even seeing people on the street like in traditional clothing as a kid, I'd be like, wow, that person like looks so different from me. And then I recently just saw an article online that had all these pictures of people who crossed over from Europe wearing their traditional dress and going through Ellis Island. And this is really not that long ago. And they were all like people from Italy wearing these amazing headdresses, and people from Poland wearing like really unique embroidered clothing, and just all of that traditional, beautiful textile work. And I know that today, if I like see someone on the street that looks like that, there's a part of me that thinks like, oh, wow, that's really different than what the norm is, you know, and mm-hmm. and even just in these small ways in terms of how we perceive other people. I think when you start to actually think about this decolonizing work, you're like, wow, this kind of mindset has really showed me that looking different is not a great thing. You know, we're taught to really kind of fit into the norm of clothing or whatever. And so that's just like one really small example that I can think of. But yeah, it goes so far beyond that.
Yeah, that's a really great example, because that even ties into examples of people appropriating indigenous cultures attire for like totally inappropriate ways and being totally blind to it, just thinking like, oh yeah, this, you know, this is just like, I'm just dressing up, which like on one level, okay, yeah, it could be an innocent dressing up, but on other level, wake up and see that this is connected to an entire culture, and what you're doing is totally could be totally disrespectful, not necessarily always, but it's, yeah, great example of the clothing. There's a lot we could go in there, but I want to get into plants, because this ultimately is about connecting with the earth too. And let's talk about the plant ancestors a little bit, and how, yeah, what ways do you approach being allies, using plants as allies to connect us with our ancestry?
Well, I love working with roots for this purpose, as we discover our own roots. I really do think that it's important to work with roots, whether it be burdock or dandelion. You know, dandelion root being a great example, that dandelion root was actually, or dandelion was brought over on the Mayflower as like a medicine and traditional food. So it's funny, because now it's kind of, you know, you could say it's colonized certain landscapes, and now we as a culture spend like millions and millions and millions of dollars on trying to eradicate this thing that we brought over and as medicine, as our own medicine, you know? So it's a really interesting way of just looking at that story in terms of how we can work with that plant a little bit, because the story is right there in the root itself and the memory of that plant. So that's one that I definitely like to work with. And So I really would just say engaging with the plants as much as possible as you are, you know, setting intention around connecting with ancestors or connecting with medicine lineages. And I just kind of go like really deep into working with them, which means drinking teas of them all the time, taking flower essences of those plants. I bathe with them. I sleep with them under my pillow. I ask them questions. I hang out with them in the woods. There's a lot of ways in which one can work with plants, but in terms of getting in touch with my ancestors, I started off the process with just connecting with roots, because they also bring us to the underworld. They bring us to the dirt itself, and we're made up of that as well. And I think that for me, it just, root medicine makes me feel really embodied in being a creature on this planet and feeling at home here. I think working with the plants and connecting to ancestors also, you know, it just makes me feel good about being on this earth. And I think that there's also a lot of, I don't know, I guess maybe guilt around being here sometimes. Like I have a lot of clients and friends who just kind of talk about how it feels even like weird to be on this planet, because things feel so extreme in terms of like politics and society, and you know, people get really overwhelmed by that, and it makes them feel just uncomfortable to be in their bodies. And I think working with plants allows us to feel at home here, that yeah, no, we actually do belong here, and this is where our people are from, this is what we are from. And the plants really do help us connect to that sense of home in our own bodies, which the more we can be embodied in these times, the better. That's for sure.
Definitely. And so for someone who's interested in getting to know a plant better, and to also, you know, I love this way you described your relationships with plants, is like you sleep with them under your pillow, you hang out with them, you take the essence and everything. So how would someone go about choosing a plant? Like, would you recommend someone research their ancestry and see if any of those plants from the old world have made it here in the new world that they could connect with? Or would any root be, you know, a way in? I mean, ultimately, I guess it could, but, you know, do you have an advice for like which way is kind of more fruitful or hits, you know, closer to the target?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they're both good options. I definitely think that doing the research and figuring out like, oh, what are the plants that grew around where my people came from, you know, and that might be a good way to connect with that. But at the same time, I think like there's something to say about honoring the present too, and just walking outside and seeing what is calling your attention, you know, and learning about that. I think that we don't want the ancestry work to be so narrow-minded and like focused on only our own ancestors too. If we can learn more about the plants and people who tended to these plants of the land that we're on now, the more reverence we have for the place that we're in. And so I think both are really great options, and I recommend doing both. See what's calling to you in your own neighborhood, what's in your yard, what's growing up between the cracks in the street. What's calling your name? And then also doing the book research of what is it that was growing around my family's people.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And the way you're saying this, it's like, hey, we are containers here we're living in a container for connecting with many ancestors, our physical bodies, ancestors, and those ancestors of the land we embody or we live on. And it's like, there's so much ancestor opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So I love this folk medicine and magic of old Europe idea of your class. And you've mentioned some things that you talk about in your class are holy waters, sex magic, and bee priestesses. Do you want to get into any or all of those?
Yeah. They're all really important to today, too, which is great. I think that, so yeah, what I do is kind of look at just different subjects that I think are really crucial to the way in which our ancestors connected with earth and with spirit and everything, really. And then kind of put those into a framework of why they're important today. For an example of that would be like talking about holy waters and looking at examples of sacred water spaces or temples or holy fountains or wells that existed in Italy, for example. And researching the stories behind that. And because there's so much, our ancestors knew that water is powerful, and that's still a thing that we're talking about today and fighting for today, that water is healing, that water is life-giving. And so really looking at what our ancestors did with holy water, with water that was considered sacred, and then I think it just kind of inspires people to go and look at the water where they live and feel inspired by using those similar traditions that we've then learned about in class and now practicing them as a way to actually be really connected to the water element. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, we could talk about sex magic.
Yeah, I definitely do. But I also want to ask, like, what were some of the things people did with holy or do with holy waters?
Yeah, all kinds of things. I mean, bathing being really important and an important place in society to just have a place to rejuvenate and rest and heal. And, you know, a lot of bathhouses existed around like different mineral pools, and those minerals have really high healing potential. And so, you know, just bathing, hanging out there. But water, you also find a lot of examples of water or these holy water sites being a place of peace, of where there was actually no war allowed to happen near some of these holy water sites. People couldn't bring any kind of quarrels there. It was a place where the community actually just deemed, no, this is a peaceful place. Here we're not going to engage in quarreling with one another. This is actually a place away from that. And so even just creating sanctuary around water and access to that sanctuary was being really special. Another thing would be like capturing rainwater and using it in spells, spells for bringing more rain. That's something that I definitely have practiced in California, is reading about ways in which witches in Eastern Europe would capture rainwater and then throw it on the ground as a way to bring rain as part of weather magic. And so I was like, okay, well, I live in a drought area, I'm going to do that too. And just, you know, have started to just implement these like folk practices that I found in my research. Yeah. And I mean, you could make waters under different phases of the moon as a way to kind of influence that lunar quality in your life. And then using that as an anointing water, that's definitely another way in which people of my ancestors used water. You can infuse different herbs into water and use it as a wash for your floor, as a way to really energize your home, or wash your windows and cleanse your windows of, I don't know, any bad stuff that's lingering there, any spirits that are trying to peer, that are trying to peer into your sacred spaces. I mean, so much of the water charm. Yeah. Get out. Yeah. And it's just, really like protection from the evil eye would happen a lot with different mm-hmm. sacred waters. And so I kind of learn about those and then put them into practice in my own life and encourage my students to do the same.
Sounds good. And it sounds kind of leads into flower essences, which is something that I know you work with and make and teach about. And I do want to talk about flower essences, but I also want to talk about sex magic. So let's talk about sex magic next and then get back to flower essences. With sex magic, is this about like actually having sex with someone or with yourself, or is this about our sexual creative energy? Like what is your approach or perspective on sex magic?
I think it's about all of the above. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It can be all over the place. And it really just depends on what someone wants to do with that and where they want to take it. But you know, I've been doing research around, you know, even traditional dances. A lot of them have to do with like fertility rites, especially some of the dances that I was seeing this summer in Italy that are still, you know, carried out in like the bars and restaurants and people dancing. They're like very, very sexual traditional dances. And, you know, our ancestors knew that like that was something to embody. This is all like definitely pre-Christian church coming in and, you know, beginning to colonize people who were very, very connected to the land. And I think that that's just a part of what, you know, that's what Beltane is all about, the traditional pagan holiday of Beltane, of understanding that fertility of the land needs to be celebrated. And because we are the land, we celebrate our own fertility. And not just in terms of like sexual fertility, but that can also be creative fertility and fire and passion. So it was traditional to on Beltane to go and have sex under the hawthorn tree. And that's the way that the land was blessed to ensure a fertile crop. And so if you really want to take that literally and go do it, yes, I recommend it. But you can also just, you know, for me, it's also just about a change of perspective of like, wow, the way in which our culture thinks about sex is really different from how my earth-based ancestors thought about sex. And there was a lot, again, of colonizing bodies, women's bodies in particular, and queer bodies that happened. And so for me, learning like about sex magic or just sex traditions, or not even that it even had to be something separate, because it was just such a part of culture anyways, has been really empowering for me in terms of how I think about my own sexuality and weird trauma that I have around my sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And the whole aspect of decolonizing your sex is so powerful. Recently I've been, you know, for my whole relationship, I've been like learning about doing this, but recently I've been like trying to step it up with me and my husband and try to, you know, he's like so logical, rational. And I'm like, well, what about if we approach it like this and do some, you know, if like we set an intention or even little things like that. So it's been really funny to like introduce this to my my totally rational husband and be like, let's enter this world. And he's like, I don't know. But he's coming willingly, you know. It's like, you know, this, if you really want to, I just have a lot of compassion for all the partners of witches who are like, hey, we're gonna explore sex this way, and they might be like, what? But I just wanted to share that because, you know, it's like I'm on this journey and I'm pretty new to bringing that to my relationship. And so anyone listening who's like, yeah, I feel you, like you're not alone, and it's been so powerful and empowering and liberating to feel safe to be able to be seen and heard and like bring up things from maybe my ancestry, or maybe just from like meditations that are like, oh, this is what I want to do with this creative fertility, this with this energy and this power. It's like there's just so much in that that is yet to be discovered and explored because we're so freaking colonized in that aspect of our lives.
Yeah, we don't really, I mean, it's hard to feel safe enough to cultivate that sense of like being able to play with yourself and experience like, oh, there's so many different ways in which I can be in a sexual relationship with someone and with myself. And yeah, it doesn't have to look at any one certain way. And I think that that's a really, yeah, it's really empowering when you look at examples from the past and say, wow, you know, like our ancestors were doing it. We can do it too.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Cool. So if I just want to reiterate here, if anyone's interested in these and they live near Mendocino, you can like totally go dive deep with Liz here in the folk medicine and magic of old Europe class. And I so wish I lived there so I could do this.
Yeah.
Think you'll ever do an online version, or do you just prefer to work in person?
I do prefer to work in person. I get so many requests for an online version though. And I would like to try to figure it out, but so much of this work too is so, I guess what I've enjoyed about the class is just being able to be really present with my students when really tough stuff comes up, you know, and just because it is hard work and it's sometimes really sad, and I love being able to be there for people when they are going through whatever comes up for them in this class and like kind of being accountable to it. And I guess I just feel afraid of like not being able to like help everyone from an online class, you know, like I want to like have the deep conversations with every single person. So mm-hmm. I need to figure out how to get over that a little bit or just find a way to create support networks for people in the class who are interested, just because, yeah, it can be really intense. And I just want to be able to witness people in that. And that's the only thing that I feel uncomfortable with in terms of an online offering.
Definitely. And I hear you. And I think part of that also stems from that, how removed or kind of asleep our culture is to the importance of grieving. And we don't really have a lot of real like support for that process. So you wanting to be able to support and guide and just be there for the people as these things come up and as they need to grieve and are learning ways to grieve is huge. And maybe could you talk to us a little bit about that grief process and what kind of stuff might come up when people start exploring this, and also how herbs can help to support these processes?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely something that is like a major theme in the class in the spring and fall sessions. I feel like grief tends to come up more in fall for people, just because that's, you know, it's darker out, we're really pulling our energy inward and being really self-reflective. And then when we're calling in the ancestors, I mean, that it just makes it a lot stronger. And so for me, I think I started to just do research about traditions and ways in which people dealt with grief. And there's not even like a book that describes like, this is how your people dealt with grief. It's just more of kind of reading in between the lines in a way of being like, oh, okay, what are plants that help people deal with pain? What are plants that my ancestors used when someone was in pain? Or what was a plant that someone would use when a divorce happened to, you know, a like clear space or something like that. So just, you know, it's not written out anywhere in that way, but you do have to do some reading between the lines. And one plant that really came up for me was willow. Willow has its roots in water. It's bendy and flexible and has been used for weaving forever, really. And any plant that has such a strong connection to water, for me, just says a lot about grief or about our emotional bodies. And so I look at what grows around water and start working with those plants. You know, our tears, they'll influence our own waters in that way when we invite them in. And so willow has been used as an analgesic, as a pain reliever, and has salicylic acid, which is like what aspirin is formed from. And it's a plant that for me has been really powerful in connecting, you know, and there's even a willow called weeping willow that's often planted in graveyards. It was planted in graveyards because it was seen as a plant that held space for grief, for pain, because it does do that in actuality. And so that's a plant that I really encourage people to work with as those feelings do come up around, wow, you know, my people, there's shadow sides everywhere. And as we connect to them more, I think it's really, really important to honor that grief and doing that by really looking at it in the eye, and allowing yourself to really feel it fully, but while also using plant allies to just allow yourself to hold it more and to hold it gracefully and to not let it cripple you or make you feel overwhelmed with guilt or frozen in it. You know, willow is about flow. It connects two moving waters. So it can teach us about how to be rooted within flow, within change, within things that make us feel overwhelmed or, overwrought with grief.
I love that. And I know I've honestly never thought of willow like that. And do you work with willow? I mean, in the same way that you mentioned before, like if you're in a period of grief, doing, you know, willow essences, sleeping with it under your pillow and hanging out with it, or is there another approach or aspect to working with willow in grief that maybe we haven't talked about or mentioned?
I think it really just depends on the person, and that's what I really try to cultivate in classes with folks, is just having them feel comfortable enough to determine for themselves the way in which they want to work with it, and really honoring that and being like, oh, this plant, it just kind of came to me in a dream that I need to work with it as a tea, or you know, just really trusting that intuitive side of ourselves, because that is also something that has been colonized. And so if there's a way in which feels right for you to work with, then that's great. But I also will say that I think when we are working with such a strong feeling of grief, and even grief that's not ours, like grief that's of ancestors, that it feels so big, you know, one thing that I do recommend is using willow using willow with water-based medicines, just because, again, the more we're interacting with water, the more we're allowing our own waters to flow and really move out and not become stagnant. So taking willow baths is incredibly healing. Drinking tea of willow leaf or of the inner bark, making a wash with it and just allowing yourself to anoint yourself with that plant. Anything that I feel like, for me, I've really connected well with willow in water because it likes water. And also it kind of fits with my intention of working with my own grief, working with my own waters. But that doesn't have to be limited to that, I guess, is all I'm trying to say.
Cool. Then let's talk about essences too. So, because you do plant and flower essences and spirit essences. I feel like essences are just blowing up. Like they're all over the place all of a sudden, which is cool. But I also want to get into how would you describe them? And what kind of relationships or interactions have you had with them? Like, what is your experience with not only making them, but using them and sharing them.
Yeah. So many things to say about flower essences. I'm totally in love with them and enchanted by them. And I just think that they are so incredibly powerful, and really invite healing in on so many realms of, yeah, of ourselves. Flower essences are there's so many different things too. Basically, you make a flower essence by taking a flower when it's in its fullest bloom and placing it in a bowl of water and allowing the sun to kind of make an imprint of that flower's vibration into the water. So you're leaving the bowl out under the sun for a certain amount of time, and then you are, and then you bottle it. Basically, you bottle the water that you've made, and then you preserve it with a little bit of brandy, and you tuck it away into a tincture bottle, and call it a day. That's a very, very simplified way of talking about like what a flower essence actually is. But I feel like for a lot of people, it seems like kind of like too woo-woo for them, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because really what you have to have an understanding of on a deeper level is just that everything in the universe has a vibration. That's really what it comes down to. And I think a lot of people don't see nature as being alive, you know, as it being animistic or having a vibration. Like they're like, oh, how could a tree have a vibration? But actually everything has a vibration. A table has a vibration. An antibiotic has a vibration. A bird, you know, so what flower essences are doing is capturing the vibration that's of a flower in its fullest bloom and creating an imprint of that vibration in water, because water is a universal conduit. It stores memory, it holds memory, it holds vibrations, and preserving that. And then you use those vibrations from these fully bloomed flowers, and you use them to just shift your own vibration a little bit. I have a teacher who calls them nature's tuning forks in that way, that they just kind of help us attune to nature.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And I think another thing that people might have, why they might be confused by or just like kind of doubt flower essences is because we're so trained to think that you have to have the like strongest dose of the strongest thing for any effect to take, have action on your body or your mind or your spirit. But really with these essences is they're coming in at that subtle vibration level. That's kind of like that foundational shift that allows the healing, the new aspect of yourself to be revealed or to come forward or to like wake up again and light up again or be accepted or whatever. It's like, so sometimes that subtle medicine can be the huge, the most powerful in that transformational foundational shift.
Yes. And I think that that's true in just understanding how healing works in general. Is just, you know, we tend to not have like huge aha, like life transformative moments with plants even. Like I feel like with plants, you know, it takes time. You have to get to know them. And we tend to not experience healing as like a one massive healing experience that happens one time only and then you're healed. You know, that's not how it works.
That is so funny.
And that's not how sickness. Yeah, and it's not really how sickness works either. It's more of just that there are these subtle things that happen to us every day or that we interact with every day that affect us. And then that can kind of build up over time into something, into the way we perceive something or the way that we feel in our bodies. And what flower essences are doing is really, it's kind of matching the way in which we live our lives, I think, in that we are influenced every day by different vibrations. And flower essences are really great at just kind of helping us realign that when things feel out of balance. And yeah, there's no big like aha. I mean, there have, like, I have experienced that too, and that's really wonderful. But I think for me, like, my deepest, most profound healing has been from just, like, setting up little rituals for myself every day that creates the stable foundation for my well-being. And I think flower essences are kind of doing that. They are doing that as well.
Ooh, yeah, they're a great daily ritual. I have mine on my altar and I go over and greet them and imbibe them. And and it's just like, you know, like rituals, little daily rituals are fun and powerful. So I also, just a like really quick note, this is totally, it's on topic, but like, your labels for your essences that you sell are awesome. Who designed them?
Thank you. Well, my friend Lisanne Delice, she designed them. I had originally designed some that were on the bottles for like 2 or 3 years even. And I would like go to Kinko's and print them out and like cut them by hand. And like as the business grew, I was like, well, I really can't do that anymore. And so I hired Lisanne to help me just kind of transfer that that idea that I originally had into something that looked way more professional and didn't have spelling errors, because they did have spelling errors. And and so she actually is an incredible herbalist. Her business is called Eye of Crow Herbs. And yeah, she's really amazing. Just shout out to her.
Cool. Yeah, those are so, I'm just like, snap, damn, those are nice. I'm like, oh, I'm like, I want like prints of them or something. I don't know. They're just like so cool. I love the rainbow, and then I just love them. Love them. Good, great job, all of y'all involved
that. Yeah, it's funny because those flower essences are like probably the most colorful thing in my life. And I am like, I grew up in New York and definitely wear a lot of black. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny because like people meet me when I tend to wear a lot of black and darker colors, and they're like, but your things are so colorful. And I'm like, yeah, because that's what really matters to me, is just that like they are vibrant and exciting, and yeah, and color is healing in it of itself.
It is so healing. Yes. And I could resonate with that. Like my, Lizzie and I grew up, our dad lived in New York City for 9 years or so. And so during my formative years, I was there a lot. And I'm so similar. Like, I love black, but I love the rainbow. And it's like, how do I make these two work together? It's always this constant, like, do I wear black today or do I wear a color? But so yeah,
it's like, feels like a really big decision for me.
I totally get it. That's funny. So you also talk about, I don't remember where I saw this, but in reading about your stuff and just reading what you had put out there, you talked somewhere about ancient flower spells and flower folklore. And I'm wondering if there's any flower spells you'd be willing to share with our listeners to sort of, you know, light them up and inspire them to go dig up more flower spells. Because like, I feel like flowers are some of the most potent and healing beings on the whole planet.
Oh, yes. Amen. I think, yeah, ancient flower spells. Well, one example or recommendation I have is there's a book that was recently published by Max Dashew of the Suppressed Histories Archives. That's based in Oakland, California. And she published this book called Witches and Pagans. And then I think like the subtitle is like European Women in Folk Religion or something like that. I can't really remember it right now, but she has a lot of really amazing information in that book about just ancient folk traditions and spells and words that held power. And I definitely recommend that as a good kind of starting point if you are looking for something and really want to feel overwhelmed by her knowledge. She's got a lot. She's got a lot to offer in that book. And I think, you know, in terms of like a spell that I can offer, again, I'm really interested in just cultivating space where people feel safe to trust their own spells that come up for themselves. I'm really like not into those magic books that are like, okay, and now you turn to the east and you recite this like really lengthy prose poem about the guardians of the east. And like that for me, having to like memorize just takes the magic out of it completely. Uh-huh. And so I just, I'm really for embodied relationship with a flower and then just seeing what comes from that. And so I guess for me, like an example of something that I like to do with flowers in full bloom would be when I am doing spells of attraction for myself, of like, what is it that I want to attract to myself? Sweetness, love, friendship, you know, whatever it may be. And using those flowers when they're in full bloom, like either on my altar or in a bowl of water that I then like sprinkle on myself every day. Because flowers, when they're open and in full bloom, they're yelling to the world, here I am and come pollinate me. It is a spell of attraction in a way. It's a spell of opening, a spell of communication. And so that for me is like a way in which I have kind of started to use them for my own empowerment.
Mm. Cool. And I love what you say about the not really digging, having to like memorize and recite these lengthy poems. I totally get it. Cause as a kid, I would read these things and I would like be like, wow, it's a lot of like crazy words I don't know.
But, yeah, totally take the fun out of it.
Right. For me too. And something I do love is I'll just be walking. And I love walking, obsessed with walking. And I'll just like hear or see this. All of a sudden, I'll just like see a spell and from some element or some like flower or plant or even a rock that's or a body of water that's like suddenly given me this spell. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Yes, I would love to do this magic with you. And so listeners, just on your walks. And if you're not going on walks, start going on walks because they're the best. Just bundle up if it's winter.
Yeah.
Just pay attention to when you notice these little things that just pop up out of nowhere and acknowledge them. They're real. They're like actual communications and spells and ideas, and like follow those threads and see where they take you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that's, I feel like that's really where... That's really how I started to learn about plants. You know, I was living in Olympia, Washington, and I would just take me and my dog out for walks, like through the alleys, and just started noticing and observing. And through that, just started cultivating relationships with like chickweed and cleavers and just seeing, wow, these little things are communicating all the time. I just had never noticed before. I never gave it the time of day. And at first it took like some time to validate that within myself, to be like, oh no, that's a real thing that I'm experiencing and I can honor that. It took me a while to get there, but for me it's been the most informative teacher is just through direct experience with the plants of, yeah, going on those walks again and again and again and saying hi and learning more every time.
Yes, totally. Perfect. And that validation is something that I think a lot of people kind of go through that phase of like, is this crazy? Am I like being really stupid for thinking this? And then finally you realize like, no, this is actually really real and awesome. So it's just a right. Kind of awkward phase, right?
Yeah. You know, you just got to fake it till you make it. That's what I always say.
There you go. That's words of wisdom. So, there's oh, there's like so much more I want to talk about. There always is so much more. I'm like, ah, oh, can we just talk for like 3 hours? but really, are you going to be at Spear Weavers this year?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So where can people get in touch with you, either in person or online, or what, you know, how can they send a pigeon your way with a note on a raven with a note on its leg?
I guess email would be the most magical way. It would be, my email is liz@sisterspinster.net and my website is sisterspinster.net. Just email is great. I would give out my phone number, but I don't have service where I live, so it's a really unreliable way of getting in touch with me. And or on Instagram or whatever. I'm just not as good as checking like direct messages on Instagram. It's like hard for me to remember to do that. So Email is definitely the most direct way.
Cool. Awesome. We'll have links to all that. And actually, I was wondering, how did you choose your name, Sister Spinster?
Yeah, I chose the name because of a few different reasons, but the main one being my relationship with nettles. Sister Spinster or Spinster is an old name for nettles because nettle fiber was used for clothing and bedding and all kinds of different things. And up until like the pretty recent future, I know that German soldiers' uniforms in World War II were woven with nettle fiber. So it has this this lineage of weaving, which is not something that I do, but I tend to think a lot about the work that I do as weaving of the plant realm, of ancestors, and, you know, just honoring spinsters, which spinster comes from the word spinner, which is a woman who spins wool. And then it evolved into spinster as being a negative term for an unmarried woman who was just kind of had to resign her life to spinning, to spinning wool forever. But I, again, am reclaiming that term as just that I think a lot of spinsters were uncompromising women who did not want to follow society standards and be like a married wife. You know, maybe that's not the life for them, especially in a time when like being a wife meant something really different than what it means now. And so, it was a way for me to honor spinsterhood as being women who are weaving their own ways of being in the world.
Excellent. Thank you for that sharing. And also, you have a lot of really cool classes. You have the folk medicine and magic, you have the root herbal apprenticeship, and some other things. And so I really, really, really want to encourage listeners to, if they're interested in this stuff, to check out your website and just check out your different offerings. I know you're going to Massachusetts in the spring, and there was something else. There was the apprenticeship and what's the other class that you're doing?
Oh, I'm offering a mystery school, an herbal mystery school this year for the first time. Yeah.
Cool. And so listeners, check it out. We'll have links to all of Liz's links, and we'll also link to what we mentioned, that we'll get a good link for that book with the ancient folk traditions and spells, and we'll link to Eye of Crow Herbs so y'all can get deep and see all these things with your own eyes. And there's so much more I wanted to talk about, decreasing wildcrafting and decolonizing runes and love charms and all kinds of stuff. So perhaps we shall talk again in the future and dig into some of those. Until then, thank you so much for coming on the show and letting me give you some pop quizzes and sharing your magnificent perspectives and magic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, you can get the secret episode that Liz and I recorded about her transition from a life based on making the money and having the stuff into living her purpose and sharing her gifts and being of service and being in right relationship with her purpose and with the earth and with the plants. It's a really great episode. She gets really vulnerable about money, and we explore some concepts around money and spirituality. And I think it's just a really great little tidbit if that's something that you struggle with or are interested in your own life. You can get that episode at www.dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret. So next time you are sitting at the computer scrolling through Facebook, I hope a little light goes off in your head to go, oh yeah, I'm going to go over to dreamfreedombeauty.com and check out those secret episodes. So put a little reminder in your head right now, and remember to check back in whenever you're at your computer again. You can find Dream Freedom Beauty on Instagram at Dream Freedom Beauty and connect with other like-minded and like-hearted folks there. We do a lot of talking and sharing about just common things we are either struggling with or successes we've had or what we're growing in our gardens and how we're connecting with spirit and with the earth. So join us in the conversation over there. And if you have questions that you would like answered, let me know and I will pose them to our people and start a conversation. And finally, I am opening up a limited number of spots for one-on-one coaching with me. And in this coaching, I give you the space and the support to move through the transformation of being really honest with yourself and helping you to really, really, really trust on a deep level your intuition, your choices, your magic, and your power, so you can move forward and live in integrity, in love, in purpose, and in abundance. If you're interested in this, drop me a line through our contact form at dreamfreedombeauty.com and I'll give you more information. And that is a very, very limited number of spots. So make sure you check it out ASAP. And just want to wish you all a very beautiful day wherever you are, a beautiful week until next week, and I'll see you then.